Welcome back to the Mbago Media Entertainment Podcast. Today, we're diving into a story that's quite the mouthful, the White House ballroom debacle, media, money, and the murky lines of influence.
It sounds like a political thriller. So, the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, published an editorial that seemed to endorse President Trump's plan to demolish part of the White House East Wing for a new ballroom. Is that the gist of it?
That's exactly right. And what's really striking is how they framed it, calling the move aggressive and quoting the idea that strong leaders reject calcification. It immediately makes you wonder what calcification even means in the context of the White House, and why a major newspaper would back such a drastic proposal.
And the ownership connection is the elephant in the room, isn't it? Jeff Bezos, the Amazon billionaire, owning the Washington Post. When a paper with that kind of history weighs in on a presidential project, especially one this significant, the owner's potential business interests inevitably come under scrutiny.
Absolutely. The $300 million price tag for this ballroom project is also mind-boggling. It's not a small renovation, it's a massive undertaking. And when you combine that with the demolition of a historic wing, and then an editorial that seems to champion it, the waters get incredibly murky, especially when we consider where the funding is coming from.
The public reaction must have been intense. Was it seen as a bold, independent move, or was there immediate suspicion about conflicts of interest? It sounds like a scenario where media ownership, political power, and corporate influence are all tangled up.
Precisely. It sets the stage for a deep dive into how a prominent newspaper, owned by a titan of industry whose company is also a donor to the very project it's defending, ends up lending its editorial voice to a controversial presidential initiative. Let's start by deconstructing that calcification argument.
Okay, so what exactly does the editorial board mean by calcification in this context? It sounds like they're suggesting that holding on to the old, the established, can be a sign of weakness, a failure to evolve or adapt.
That's a great way to put it. They seem to be applying this concept to the White House East Wing, perhaps viewing its current state as outdated or inefficient. The editorial board is suggesting that clinging to historical preservation can be seen as stagnation or ossification.
And by praising the aggressive move to demolish, they're implicitly celebrating boldness and decisiveness in leadership, right? It's a narrative that positions Trump as a leader unafraid to break with tradition and remake things according to his vision.
Exactly. This framing aims to cast the demolition not as destruction, but as a powerful statement of intent. They're promoting a narrative of forward momentum and a departure from the past, suggesting that a strong leader must eschew calcification.
The modernization angle also seems key here. The editorial likely implies that the new ballroom is a necessary upgrade for the demands of a modern presidency, perhaps enhancing hosting capabilities or providing a more prestigious venue for diplomatic events.
That's a plausible interpretation. They might be suggesting the existing facilities are simply inadequate for contemporary needs. But what criticisms are they trying to preempt with this language? By emphasizing strong leadership and rejecting calcification, they seem to be anticipating pushback on historical preservation and cost.
And by framing critics as simply resistant to change, they can dismiss those concerns more easily. It's a rhetorical strategy to align readers with the perceived strength and decisiveness of the action, rather than inviting a nuanced debate.
Precisely. The tone itself is persuasive, almost advocacy-driven. But this justification leads us to an even more complex layer, the funding. Because beyond the editorial's defense, the source of the money is where things get really sticky.
Let's talk about that $300 million price tag again. It's astronomical. And the fact that it's being funded by private corporate donors is the critical detail, isn't it? This isn't taxpayer money.
It is. And here's the kicker, Amazon is explicitly listed among these corporate donors. This isn't a hypothetical, it's a documented financial contribution from the company founded and led by the owner of the Washington Post.
Wow. So, Amazon is donating money to a project that the Washington Post's editorial board is defending. That immediately screams conflict of interest, doesn't it? Can the Post truly be objective when its owner's company is a direct financial contributor?
The perception, if not the reality, is that the editorial board's stance could be influenced. This raises serious questions about journalistic integrity and the public's trust. Can we trust the paper's commentary when these financial ties exist?
And it opens the door to broader concerns about corporate influence. If Amazon can fund a White House project, what's to stop other corporations from seeking influence through similar donations? It suggests a dynamic where private capital might gain leverage over public institutions.
It raises the uncomfortable question of whether public institutions are becoming more susceptible to the financial clout of large corporations. This brings us to the ethical considerations: journalistic ethics, transparency, and the unavoidable appearance of impropriety.
How does this funding model align with the public's expectation of trust in media? It blurs the lines between reporting, editorializing, and corporate lobbying, potentially eroding that trust.
This entanglement forces us to consider the broader landscape of influence and power. It's not just about a ballroom, it's about the mechanisms through which wealth and power interact with public institutions and the media that covers them. Now, let's look at some historical context, or perhaps the lack thereof.
Right. What's the historical significance of the White House East Wing itself? It served various functions over the years, acting as a visitor entrance and housing important offices. It's not just an architectural afterthought.
Exactly. While it has seen renovations, a complete demolition for a new, privately funded ballroom is a different proposition. The editorial's embrace of aggressive demolition suggests alternatives might not have been prioritized.
When we compare this to other presidential projects or renovations to public spaces, the funding model here seems particularly unique. Were historical projects funded primarily by corporations with direct financial benefit, and how were they received?
That's a key differentiator. The Bezos post-Amazon situation is a highly visible and explicit example of potential entanglement. History does offer examples of media outlets whose coverage has been questioned due to owner interests, but this feels more direct.
So, the debate isn't just aggressive versus calcified, but also about responsible stewardship of a national landmark versus compromising historical integrity for perceived progress and corporate patronage.
Precisely. Understanding these historical and ethical dimensions is crucial. It's about the intricate and often opaque relationships between wealth, media, and political power that shape our public discourse and institutions.
This brings us to the broader implications for public trust. When a situation like this occurs, it can significantly erode trust in news reporting, making audiences skeptical of whether editorial stances are genuine or influenced by financial interests.
We're seeing a trend where the lines between corporate interests, media platforms, and political power are increasingly blurred. Is this ballroom situation an isolated incident or a symptom of a larger systemic issue?
It really underscores the need for greater transparency. Transparency about project funding is essential, but so is transparency about the ownership and financial dealings of media outlets covering these projects. What mechanisms can ensure better accountability?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Stricter regulations on media ownership, clearer disclosure requirements for corporate funding, and enhanced ethical guidelines for news organizations are all potential solutions.
And the role of the editorial board itself is highlighted. Is their function to reflect the owner's interests, or to provide independent commentary? Navigating these potential conflicts of interest is a delicate act.
Looking ahead, we have to consider the responsibilities of media owners, publishers, and journalists. Establishing clearer firewalls between ownership interests and editorial decision-making is vital.
This situation serves as a cautionary case study. It highlights the complex interplay of wealth, media, and political action, forcing us to confront uncomfortable questions about influence, integrity, and public trust.
Let's really dig into that linguistic analysis now. Reevaluating aggressive and necessary. When the Post calls the demolition aggressive, it's not neutral language. It suggests forcefulness, perhaps even a disregard for objections.
And necessary action, what makes it necessary? The editorial doesn't seem to offer concrete evidence of functional deficiencies. It relies on the abstract concept of strong leadership, which can be a rhetorical tactic to gloss over practical concerns.
If the need were truly so pressing, wouldn't they provide more detailed evidence? The absence of such evidence amplifies the suspicion that the editorial is more about posturing than reasoned argument. It's a subtle nudge towards a narrative favorable to the donor.
And the idea of private donors funding such a significant project. While it might seem positive to avoid taxpayer burden, it raises concerns about the privatization of public space and influence. Who truly controls the agenda then?
It shifts the focus from public service to private patronage. This creates a system where access and influence might be determined by financial contributions rather than democratic processes. It's a significant departure from how presidential renovations have typically been handled.
Most presidential renovations were funded through public appropriations, subject to oversight. This move towards significant private funding, especially from corporations with vested interests, is a notable shift.
It transforms the executive mansion from a symbol of national heritage into a potential canvas for corporate influence. The term aggressive can easily be interpreted as destructive when balanced against historical integrity.
Who is the Post trying to persuade with this editorial? The general public, policymakers, or other corporate leaders? The language suggests an audience attuned to political and corporate strategy.
It's possible it's intended to normalize the idea of aggressive, privately funded presidential projects among a certain elite. This could have profound implications for future journalistic practices, potentially encouraging other media owners to leverage their publications for business interests.
That creates a chilling effect on independent journalism. The pursuit of profit and influence could overshadow the commitment to truth and public service. The role of the journalist could shift dramatically.
This really highlights the crucial role of media literacy. In an era of concentrated media ownership and financial entanglements, the public needs to critically analyze information, understand ownership structures, and question underlying motivations.
These skills are necessary for navigating the modern information landscape. And what about the ethical dilemma for journalists at The Washington Post? How do they reconcile their commitment to objectivity with the ownership structure?
It's a difficult ethical tightrope. They might face self-censorship or a subtle shift in focus to avoid uncomfortable truths. This situation is more than just a building project, it's a microcosm of broader societal trends.
It forces us to confront uncomfortable questions about influence, integrity, and the very nature of public trust. The call for aggressive action might actually be a call to aggressively question the motives behind such proposals.
Now, let's move on to the summary table. It breaks down the key factors, strengths, and challenges quite effectively. First, media ownership and editorial independence.
Right. The strength is that Bezos' ownership provides a unique lens into potential financial influence, highlighting the complex relationship between media conglomerates and their owners' broader business portfolios. It emphasizes the need for transparency.
And the challenge? Maintaining perceived and actual editorial independence when the owner's company is a direct donor to a project the newspaper is advocating for. That's a major conflict of interest that erodes public trust.
Next, the calcification narrative. The insight here is that this framing positions strong leaders as those who embrace modernization, potentially appealing to a desire for progress. It's a strategic rhetorical choice.
The weakness, though, is its abstract nature. It can dismiss legitimate concerns about preservation and cost, painting critics as merely resistant to change. It sidesteps detailed justifications.
Then we have corporate funding and influence. The insight is that private capital is playing a significant role in funding large-scale projects associated with public institutions, potentially shaping agendas.
The challenge is the profound ethical question of corporate influence. When a company funds a project and its owner's media outlet champions it, it creates an undeniable appearance of impropriety and potential undue influence.
Following that is historical preservation versus modernization. The insight is the tension between preserving landmarks and the need for modernization, with aggressive demolition highlighting different stewardship philosophies.
The weakness is the risk of irreversible destruction of historic structures. The challenge is balancing new facilities with the responsibility to maintain national heritage, especially when alternatives might exist.
Finally, public trust and media literacy. The strength or insight is that this situation is a potent case study for the erosion of trust, highlighting the need for media literacy to critically assess information and identify conflicts of interest.
And the challenge? The increasing complexity of media ownership makes it difficult for the public to discern genuine commentary from influenced advocacy, leading to cynicism and weakening informed public discourse.
So, in conclusion, this controversy is a powerful reminder of the complex intersection of power, media, and the public interest. It forces us to question the integrity of our institutions and the information we consume.
Absolutely. The scenario with the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos, Amazon, and the White House Ballroom Project is a stark illustration of how financial ties can blur the lines of journalistic ethics and corporate influence. It compels us to be more critical consumers of media.
The framing of aggressive action and rejection of calcification, while potentially persuasive to some, ultimately raises more questions than it answers about transparency and genuine public service.
It underscores the importance of demanding accountability from both media organizations and those who fund projects involving public institutions. The public trust is a fragile thing, easily eroded by the appearance, or reality, of conflicts of interest.
And it highlights that true progress isn't just about new buildings, but about maintaining integrity, transparency, and upholding the principles that underpin a healthy democracy.
Well said. That wraps up our deep dive into the White House ballroom debacle. Thanks for joining us on the Mbago Media Entertainment Podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been a fascinating, if somewhat concerning, discussion.